And we're back. So I've been warned by the guy doing the camera work that I should sit still, not lean forward, not bounce around, and try not to move out of shot, otherwise you'll hurt me. So if you say that to me, anything could happen. With me to bounce around on set for the next 45 minutes is the marvellous John Craddock. As I said earlier on, this is a gentleman who, if I see his name on a conference agenda, I will make a beeline for whatever he's talking about. Quite frankly, whatever he's talking about. If it's green grocery or gardening, I'll still come and listen to you, John. So, with that, Mr. John Craddock, MVP, what are you going to talk to me about for the next 45 minutes?
Well, I think we're going to be bouncing around, aren't we? Yeah, I mean, I did ask if I could stand up and move around, but I won't. So I'm going to talk to you about AD, but not on-premise AD, okay. Azure AD. And a lot of my customers say, well, what is this Azure AD thing? And they look very puzzled because they expect it to be like on-premise, but it's really different. Except it does all the good things like authenticating people, but not with things like Kerberos.
Okay, so I know the answer to this, but it's not a domain as I know it that my servers are part of, that my workstations join. It's where I put my users, and I can build on from there, yeah?
Yes, I think that's a very good summary. So what I want to do is actually start off by sort of setting the scene. And the scene today is resources are absolutely everywhere. So you might have resources that are on-premises. You might have resources that maybe in a partner cloud. You know, actually servers at the premises of that partner or in a cloud service they're using. You might be looking at using the public cloud and typically Office 365, various SaaS apps that are out there, or you might have your own private cloud. And of course, we have our user. We still can't get away from the users. You know, we still need them.
We do try.
Occasionally. Yeah, but we can't. And of course, they want to be able to connect everywhere. Okay. And the expectation is single sign-on.
Right.
And then we have now the additional challenge of any device. So protocols that might have worked with desktops and big servers and all the rest of it don't necessarily work on the smaller devices or work so well. Mm-hmm. So we need to be able to address that. And then, of course, there's the challenge of multi-hop. So a user comes in, authenticates to a front-end server, and that front-end server wants to go off to a back-end server, maybe call some web APIs with the identity of the logged-in user. So they're doing a delegation. Okay. We need to be able to support that. And another challenge is we might have a server out there that is doing things on behalf of the user when the user is no longer logged in. So that's the challenge.
Right.
And we can sum it up very easily, but before we do that, just one good thing is the data is likely to be transported by HTTP, HTTPS.
Okay.
So we do have an industry standard now for talking to all these different servers. So we've got anywhere, anyone, anything, and anywhere means our app could be on-premises, it could be in cloud, could be in a partner organization, and we want an identity model that works regardless of where that app is located.
Right.
And then we've got our users. Could be from our own organization, could be a user from with some sort of social identity of some kind, maybe a customer. And of course, they want to use their you know, notepads and iPads and
any device, anywhere.
And then where's their identity? Next challenge. Okay. So again, it could be from our own organization. It could be our on-premise AD that's got that identity. It could be a partner that doesn't know about Microsoft and they're using some completely different identity service. I hear there are a few people like that, but maybe not very many.
Other forms of authentication are available.
Yes. And then you've got third-party sort of enterprise identity providers. And okay. I guess Microsoft is one of those with Azure AD, but there are lots of others available as well. And then, of course, social identity. So Google identity, Facebook identity, and so on.
Right.
Okay. And we've got to bring it all together. And federation is sort of like the umbrella to bring it all together. So we integrate this lot. So what federation really should give us is an identity framework that can be consumed by application service regardless of where they're located. All right, so where's that identity? We don't care. Where's the server? We don't care. Where's the user? We don't care. What device they're working on? We don't care.
Right, so long as we've got that standard language we can talk between us,
yes,
we're okay.
And that, I think you summed it up very well. Standard.
I worry when people put standard in air quotes, you know, Jim.
Well, yes, I know. Because there are standards, and then there are standards. And very typically, there were sort of WS Federation and SAML were sort of the protocols of choice. They were the enterprise protocols. Microsoft was very much a champion of WS Federation. And when they brought out claims authentication for SharePoint, it was using WS Federation. Yep. You know, the Windows Identity Foundation was very much grounded on WS Federation. However, we have some game changers. And those are those devices. WS Federation, SAML, big chunky tokens, very nicely described in XML, but not so great when you've got a much smaller stack to have to deal with them. So we need better protocols for that. Okay. And we've got OpenID Connect. I mean, it's gone through various sort of stages, but OpenID Connect is an authentication protocol, and OAuth2 is an authorization protocol. So we can authorize a server to act on our behalf to gain access to a back-end resource owned by us using delegated authentication, and that's where OAuth2 comes in. And in fact, OpenID Connect layers on top of that.
All right.
They're referred to also as sort of modern protocols or modern authentication protocols. And then, of course, there's the nice-to-haves. You know, we're providing identity for users. It'd be nice if they could reset their passwords.
Yes, yeah, that's as an IT pro who has to support users with the memory of a goldfish, it'd be nice if they can do self-service as well. I noticed you got that on there.
So we've got self-service, so self-service password resets, but self-service group membership. So if you want to add yourself to a group, you know, and do we let it happen automatically, or do we go through an approval process? That's a nice to have. And then there's multi-factor authentication, of course, which we need to have built in.
Yep.
Detailed auditing and reporting. So where are those users? You know, are there any anomalies in terms of how they're logging on? Mm-hmm. Did they suddenly go from New York to, Abu Dhabi in 30 seconds and log in again, you know?
Yeah.
But we have to deal with that because there might be two outlets to a corporate network, one in New York and one in Abu Dhabi. So we need to be able to also cater for that. User enrollment would be very useful as well. So how do we get users enrolled into our system? And of course, many, many more things that would be very useful.
Okay.
So just to give a little bit of basic, a bit of scene setting, which I think is important when we're talking about sort of protocol flows and things. A user wants to log in to application X. So what they do is they go to a security token service. And the first thing the security token service is going to do is say, is that user authenticated? Mm-hmm. Now, the security token service may actually authenticate the user, or it may pass you to another security token service to authenticate that user. So we can have referrals going on.
Okay.
So one token service trusts another one. But what's happening is that user is going to the token service and saying, please, can I have a token that is valid to application X? And then we can craft a token for application X. You know, if you look Kerberos days, sort of similar in some ways,
yep.
But it's one token fits all, right? You suddenly get this token, which has got your name on it, and all your group membership, all right? And you pass that to a server, which may not need to know any of that information.
Yeah, so it's my driving license, isn't it? You've validated me, you hand me a little plastic card that's got about 14 lines as to what I can drive, and actually you only care about the moped, but we've got that nice, he says I am who I am and we're off.
Yes, but what would be nice is knowing what the application wants and saying, actually, we don't care that you can drive a moped, all we need to know is are you over 21?
Right.
And we could assert that.
Of course I'm over 21.
Are you? Okay.
Only just, though, I mean, you know, my youthful complexion.
Yeah. So that token is then passed to the relying party, and the relying party is going to check the signature on it, and so it needs to know about how it's been signed by the token service. If the signature is valid, it says that user is authenticated, and the things contained on it, the claims, are assertions about the user, and they're valid assertions.
All right.
And what do you put on the token? Anything you like. Okay, so that's sort of basic, and I think it's important to sort of understand that flow.
Yep.
How it actually flows between the user and the security token service and the application is a different story, which we're not going to go into in this very short space of time. Microsoft's skin in the game. We've got ADFS and we've got Microsoft Azure AD. Now, what I've done is I've put Windows Server 2016 ADFS because it fully supports OpenID Connect and it has much better support for OAuth 2 than previous versions of ADFS.
Okay.
So Server 2016 ADFS and Microsoft Azure AD have a very similar way of supporting these protocols.
So we could swap one for the other. It's worth pointing out for those going 2016 that Ignite is, what, 2 weeks away? And it's already been announced that Server 2016 should be available either at Ignite or shortly after. So this isn't something that's 12 months away, is it, John? It's something that's a couple of weeks away.
Oh, yes. It's not very far away at all.
Yeah.
So just very, very quickly, if you look at ADFS, it's a security token service. Mm-hmm. And what we'll do is we'll have a user go to ADFS, say, please, can I have a token to a particular application? And it will authenticate that user. And it will could authenticate the user against on-premise AD. But now in 2016, you can also go against an LDAP directory. So that will please an awful lot of people, because that's a really important feature.
Right.
Produces a token for the application based on a set of rules. It can consume tokens from other security token services as proof of authentication of the user. And of course, it exposes a whole bunch of endpoints. Great, fantastic. Just what we need. Except we need the infrastructure to support it.
Right, yes, of course.
And of course, it needs to be highly available because it's a very critical component now to our identity services. So we're going to have to build a farm.
Yep.
And then you'll probably want to get to it over the internet. So we'll need a farm of web application proxies in front of it as well. So it's not a simple task to deploy. But if we look at Azure AD, what we have in the cloud is an identity store. So, you know, we can put users in it. How do we put users in it? Well, there's a management portal.
Okay.
In fact, there are two, but I'll come back to that. There's a REST API set, right? So we can actually programmatically gain access. You can do it with PowerShell as well. And there's Graph APIs as well. So we can manage it very simply.
All right.
So you could create all the users up there, and it could be totally nothing to do with your on-premise AD.
So if I don't have an on-premise AD, I can use that from the get-go, create users in there, never have to know about on-prem AD, and I'm golden.
Yes, yeah, you could certainly go down that route. And then you could authenticate to all these distributed services that you want to authenticate to. Or we can take our on-prem users and we can synchronize them into Azure AD.
Okay.
So all our users up in Azure could be on-prem users that have gone up there. And exactly what that means, we'll come back to.
All right.
Then this guy will basically authenticate against your Azure subscription. It will authenticate against Office 365, your own apps, your partner apps, and a whole raft of SaaS apps as well that are available through a gallery.
Okay.
So, you know, that really does everything ADFS will do, but more, because it's got its own built-in identity store as well, which we can programmatically control. We can sync our users from on-prem AD.
And it sounds like the nice bit there is I don't have to configure many of those applications, whereas if I wanted to use ADFS, I would do, I assume.
Well, you'll still need to, if you've got an application, let's say you have a ClaimsAware application or an OpenID Connect app or a OAuth2 app, you'll still need to configure it into Azure AD.
All right.
We'll still need to configuration. But there's a whole you know, 2,600 plus applications that you can just choose from.
That Microsoft have already prepared for.
For you.
Yeah. Now, that sounds attractive.
Infrastructure, right? Remember we had that farm of ADFS.
Yeah, you got four or five servers and a load balancer and a network.
An identity store.
Well, go on then, hit me with...
That's what you need. An Azure subscription. And
okay. To
do some of the management now with the new portal, and I'll come back in a second and explain what I mean by the new portal, there are some tasks you don't even need to be a co-administrator or administrator of an Azure subscription. So you can just be an administrator of the Azure AD, and then you can use the new portal.
Okay, so as the purchasing guy or the absolute top of the tree, if you like, I can own the subscription and I can grant you access to manage as your AD because I don't want to, but you can't manage the sub, is that right?
But I can't touch the sub.
Fantastic.
And I can't go and suddenly think, oh, wouldn't it be nice to create 400 VMs and leave them running overnight?
But you just said you don't need any infrastructure, John.
Yeah. So that's all you need to get an AD. Now there are sort of there's free, there's basic, there's premium as directories, and you can see from this table, which I'm not going to go through because there's just not time.
Yep.
On the right hand side, you get a lot more with premium. One of the great things about premium is you've got group management. You've also got the Azure AD application proxy and reporting. So, well, you still get reporting in the other versions, but you get even better reporting.
Right. Okay.
So how do we get ourselves an AD tenant? Basically, if you've got Office 365, you are already an Azure AD tenant.
All right.
However, you go in through the Office 365 portal and you do Office 365 type things to it. So if you want to go off and use all those SaaS apps and all the rest of it, you need to bring that tenant into an Azure AD subscription. Oh, sorry, not an Azure AD subscription, but an Azure subscription. So you need to bring it into your subscription.
I need to connect the two so yes. I can manage it through the Azure portal rather
yes.
than just the Office
yep.
portal. Okay.
So alternatively, what we do is we create an Azure AD tenant through the Azure portal, so you can do that. And your initial user is going to be someone at tenant name, which you define, which needs to be unique. So you put a name in xyz.com, XYZ, and what it will do is says, is XYZ unique? And probably you'll get a little red cross next to it, and you'll have to choose something, you know,
right.
maybe Rick XYZ, who knows? Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But you need to define a tenant name. But it's going to be, you would log in username at, you know, your tenant name dot on Microsoft.com. And you probably don't want to do that. So what you'll need to do is add your own custom domains in as well.
Okay.
In terms of the Azure portals, as I say, there are currently two. Last week, we would have used the old portal. Oh, sorry.
It's the classic portal.
It's no longer called the old portal. It's
you reach a certain age, you become classic,
portal.
Don't we?
Yeah. Yep. We would use the classic portal. However, the new portal in terms of AD administration was lit up this week.
Yes, I noticed that literally just sort of Monday or Tuesday, wasn't it?
So. Yes. So that became available. It doesn't do everything you need at the moment.
Right.
And there are certain things you can't do in the classic portal as well. So for instance, if you want to create a B2C directory, you can't do it in the classic portal. But if you think about it, it's a bit like the protocols. So WS Federation and SAML are protocols that are going to be around for a long time, and you probably have to work with them because some enterprises will have them and be using them, but there's going to be no new innovation with them. Whereas
right.
the new innovation is going to be with OpenID Connect and OAuth. So the portal's a bit like this. So there will be no new innovation with the classic.
Yeah.
The new innovation will come from the new portal.
Okay.
You can customize your logon. So you make it look like your own corporate image. And there are the nice to have. So you've got password resets, you've got self-service, you've got multi-factor authentication, all built in. Very detailed reporting and auditing, especially if you're going for the premium version of the AD. With B2C, we get user enrollment, so we can actually have users enroll themselves and they get verified through email.
Right.
And then there's other features as well, which are there. And they're continuous. It's innovation all the time. New things are coming in. So what I'd like to do is actually show you the Azure portal in action.
The classic portal or the new portal?
I think we should start with the new portal, don't
you? Alrighty then.
So we're going to start off in the new portal, and if we go across and just start off, we'll come to the login screen, and you notice I've got a number of users I can log in to. Let's try another user. Let's go in as one of my corporate users. So it's going in as xdseminars.co.uk, and immediately I tab into the password, I come up with my own portal. So you can customize it and make it, you know, familiar look and feel. Now, I've got a rather tortuous name, tor1.users.xtshub.com, and you might think, why on earth have I got a a suffix like that. The reason is I use that in the hands-on masterclass we use, so every person can have their own domain names.
Oh, okay.
So we have one dot users,
so I could
two
be
dot
two
users,
dot XT.
Yeah, right. And so on. Okay, so and that's the portal, which during the week you will actually customize. So we're going as Tor, and Tor happens to be my AD global administrator, and he also happens to manage the AD subscription as well. So this is the new portal, and lit up beginning of the week is Azure Active Directory. If you clicked on that last week, what would have happened, it would say to manage this you have to go to the old portal, and you click on it and it would take you there. Now there's a dashboard associated with it. I'm not going to go into the details at that at the moment. What I want to do is just have a look at a little bit of functionality. So for instance, domain names. I said you can add your own domain name. Yep. I've actually got two domain names added, one.ad.xtshub.com and one.users.xtshub.com. And they're both verified, been added. One is federated, whatever that means, and we will come back to what that means later on. And there's the onmicrosoft.com, which is the initial domain when the directory was created.
Right.
So very simple interface. I just go add. I put in a domain name, so why don't we just use mydomain.com, add the domain, and of course it can't add any old domain, it needs to verify it. So what it's doing, it's saying you need to put a TXT record into your DNS zone, or you can now do it with MX records.
Right. So I create a record, it proves I own it.
Yes, yeah. Well, I don't own this, and I apologize to whoever mydomain.com is. And so I'm going to actually delete this because there's no way I can verify it. But it shows you how quick it is to actually add a domain in. Mm-hmm. If we look at our users, this is a very user-centric interface. So it's showing my users that have signed in. It's showing the groups that are available. So all users, all groups, password reset, etc. And it also is giving me a dashboard on the right-hand side. So if I go to all users, I get my users enumerated, and I can now search for a user. So I've got Harry Lime. And we look at Harry Lime, and we can get details again in a dashboard about Harry Lime. But let's actually look at Harry's profile. And so it's now going to enumerate the various attributes that belong to Harry. We can also upload a photo of Harry if we want to. And what we can see is he's got a user type of member. So he's just an ordinary member of this AD. And his source is Windows Server AD, which means he's been replicated from on-premises. Do you remember it said, I've got a connector in to do that.
Okay.
And if I want to, what I can do is I can go to the directory role and I could change him to being a global administrator or a limited administrator. But look at groups, where you can see the groups Harry's belonging to, so it's class users group, again out of my masterclass, and if I want to, I can add him in to a different group, so various groups. If we go to the Active Directory dashboard again, what we can see, there's additional functionality, such as PIM, the Privileged Identity Management, which restricts how it controls privileged operations in the directory.
Right.
So in terms of administration. And we've got identity protection, which is actually sort of monitoring user behavior and logons and anomalies and can report on that as well. And you can make decisions based on, if you've had a user that's never, ever forgotten their password and suddenly they're doing password resets all the time, there's machine intelligence running now, so we can actually pick
flag up
on those types of anomalies. If we go across to more services, one of the things you won't find in the old portal is the B2C service. So if we just look at that, that's where we manage B2C. And if we want to do other things, and you will have to go back here quite often these days, you go to the classic portal the challenge will be things are being ported all the time. So, but through the classic portal, we can see in there the directories, and I can actually go to my directory that I was looking at in the new portal and I've got a dashboard, users, groups, etc., etc. So I can manage all that through.
Okay.
So it gives you a little bit of an idea, but you know, we had one domain which was federated. So the question is, how do we integrate on-premise AD users with Azure AD?
Okay.
And we can have Azure AD users and on-premise users, right,
in the same AD directory. Okay.
So one of the options is, well, if we're going to do any integration at all, we need directory synchronization.
Right.
And we do that using Azure AD Connect.
And that's the copy users from AD into Azure AD, which is where that user came from field that you showed me a moment ago.
Yes, yes. And for instance, now there's certain write back, so we can do device write back, we can do password. So if we're doing password reset in Azure, it's nice to have those password resets written back to on-prem.
Okay.
So we've got write back capabilities as well. Azure AD Connect has actually got pretty sophisticated now. So synchronization, and then we could just sync users and groups.
Right.
And the logon experience would be username, different password.
Because we've not pushed their password.
Because we've not pushed the password.
Right.
We can sync users' passwords and groups. Now, it's not a clear text password that gets synced up. It's a hash of a password.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
So even if all the hashes were stolen in Azure, it would be useless on premises. So it's a fairly secure way of doing it. Our experience then is same username, same password, not single sign-on, so same, but we're using the same username and same password.
So I'm guessing if I change my password on-prem and was quick enough that you hadn't done that sync, I could fail to log in the cloud.
Yes,
yeah?
Yes, that would be a possibility.
Right.
And then you can synchronize users and group with single sign-on. And when we do that, what's going to happen is we're going to go up to Azure AD. It's going to say, aha, a federated domain. So Rick's in a federated domain. That means I need to go down to on-premises and say, authenticate this user. So we're going down to your own on-premise AD to do the authentication. Now, today, we need the ADFS infrastructure.
The stuff that you showed us in that slide
yes,
earlier on.
But
all right.
All yep. I'm going to say is watch this space. There will be changes. But I can't say more than that at the moment. And then we can do the sort of multi-domain, multi-forest sync capability. And exactly the same thing is going to happen. So when we go to log in, we'll end up at Azure AD. Azure AD recognizes that we're federated. Okay. So let's actually just have a look at that in terms of what it looks like. So I've got a user who's going to log in to the portal. And we'll close that off first of all. And we're going to go to this application here, which looks amazingly complicated, and I guess it is to a certain extent. Again, it's a way of investigating all the different types of flows that you can have with OpenID Connect and OAuth2, doing admin consent and all sorts of other bits. And this is something we use in the masterclass hands-on, so we go into all those details.
Okay.
But for the moment, I'm just doing a very simple logon here, which is going to be the hybrid flow logon, and it takes me up to Azure, okay? And what we're gonna do is we're gonna choose Harry. Now, as soon as I've chosen Harry, it says, aha, Harry is from a federated domain and redirects me down to on-prem. So that's my on-premise ADFS,
right?
And we're logged in. The token is actually issued by the Azure AD, because we can see that we are Harry. And it's Harry at one.ad.xthub.com is my on-premise AD
user. Right.
User.
Gotcha.
And that's the UPN from there. So what's actually happened is we've gone to Azure AD, we've typed in the username, right? It said federated domain. What I need to do is redirect you down to your on-premise ADFS. We get down to the on-premise ADFS, we plumb in the thing, and then we're back to Azure AD, and we actually, at that point, then issue the token for the application. So the token is actually issued by Azure AD. So let
gotcha.
Me just show you that very quickly.
All right.
Browse the app.
Yep.
Not authenticated. So it bounces us back, not authenticated, with a redirect, sends us to Azure AD.
Right.
We put in the information about the user, and it does what we call home realm discovery based on the UPN. So it knows where our ADFS server is for that particular domain name.
Right.
Bounces us off to the ADFS server. We authenticate, which is what Harry did down the own AD. Bounces us back with a security token service, which says this user has just been authenticated by the ADFS server, but the application doesn't know anything about the ADFS server. Who knows about the ADFS server? It's Azure AD. So we end up going back to Azure AD and process the token, and we end up with a token for the application.
Right.
So that's the process. We return the cookies and we're in. So in terms of accessing applications, we look at the challenge there. SaaS apps absolutely everywhere, all right? And the question is, how many passwords do you have, all right? And how do you write them down? Because you have a different one for absolutely every app you're going to on the internet, or you know, wherever they are, private, public, cloud. Or do you make them all the same?
Oh, I'm not sure about that one.
No, but interestingly enough, there's 80% of users use the same password on multiple sites, which is very dangerous because those multiple sites are continuously being hacked. They get all the passwords from one site and then they start playing them against other sites. And before you know it, you know, somebody's in your Amazon account doing all sorts of nasties or buying all sorts of interesting things.
Yeah.
So the other problem is what happens when you leave and join. And the other thing is how many apps are being used that you haven't actually approved of, the corporate organization haven't approved of. So solution is to use the app gallery or add a custom application. And so what that will allow us to do is do federated authentication, if it's available, password vault, which means your username and password is actually stored securely in Azure AD. So you log on with your Azure AD credentials, and then AD takes care of the username and password to your other applications.
Okay, so I don't have a single identity at that point. I'm not using my Azure AD credentials to log into whatever that app is, but Azure AD is storing my username and password for that app. And I assume I unlock it when I log into Azure AD, and then it hands it on for me.
Yes, okay. Yes. And the nice thing about that, you could have, let's say you have a social media account, which needs to be used by a number of people. You could actually have a number of Azure accounts unlock that one social media account.
So does that mean that Azure AD can create the kind of password that I could never remember for me?
No, you actually, in this instance, you're actually supplying the password yourself.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And then there's another component, which is Cloud App Discovery, which allows you to discover all the apps that are being used. And we can monitor all our systems to find out what apps are actually being used.
Okay.
And that's part of Azure as well. 2,600 SaaS apps available through an access panel. All right, so, and we can assign apps to users, we can assign apps to groups, we can let users self-provision apps, and so on. And of course, it's available, you know, for iOS, etc. as well.
Okay.
So let's have a very, very quick demo of that. And what I'm going to do is, I'm going to go to the access panel, and I'm going to go, and the access panel, I'm going in as Tor, so we'll log in as Tor to the access panel. And again, this is Tor is a local AD account. And what's happened is this is his personal access panel with the apps that are available to him. And the nice thing about it, you've always got some excitement like, try it out. Something new is happening. Now let's see what happens when we click on that. Oh, that's pretty cool. All right, so we've now, and there's my LinkedIn account. And what I'm doing is I'm just clicking on there, and this is going to unlock LinkedIn for me. And I've happened to use, although it's Tor that's logged in, I've happened to use my LinkedIn credentials to get there. And that's automatically logged in to LinkedIn. Okay. So, you know, this is getting around this problem of how do we get to lots and lots of applications.
So does that mean, really quickly, if I've got a, let's say I've got a marketing Twitter account, I can store those creds and give you and me and other people maybe access to log into that corporate marketing Twitter account so they don't know what the password is, so they can't lose it or tell other people?
Well, let's just start back one step back. Yes, you've got that convenience, but actually they could know the password because the password is injected back into the browser.
Right.
So what you have to do is say, you know, these five people, yes, they know the password, but they don't have to think about it. So it's a convenient way of working, but you must think from a security's perspective that they have access to the password, okay, because it does come into your browser, okay, and therefore you can find. I mean, you could put Fiddler up and immediately say it, or you can do some other little hacks, right, to see it.
So that's,
as
that's
well,
probably an important thing to remember, yeah, but it doesn't detract from the usefulness of it, I think.
Yeah. So in terms of your own applications, you know, these applications, wherever they might be, we can authenticate to them with WSFed, with SAML, you know, which the enterprise style protocols, OpenID Connect, which is our modern authentication protocol, or we could authorize one app to access something else, you know, some web API using OAuth2. And with OAuth2, we get things like consent and all sorts of things. But one of the things people want to do is they've got legacy apps, right? Windows auth apps. How do we deal with those? How do we make that work?
Okay.
And to do that, what we can do is we can use the Azure AD application proxy. So in terms of that, what happens here is we actually connect to the Azure AD cloud. So we're going to have a public IP to connect to our application, which is in the Azure AD cloud. So we're not having to publish a reverse proxy. We're not having to publish a VPN endpoint for a user. What we do is we say, the application, or to give it its full name, is the Azure AD application proxy. You're not allowed to shorten it.
Trips off the tongue.
Yeah, it just trips off the tongue. So the endpoint for that is in the cloud.
Right.
Right.
Okay,
so we come there. We go then down through a secure connector.
Right.
Right. And we can create connector groups to give us fault tolerance to an endpoint which is on premises. Right. That endpoint makes a connection with outbound connections only. So we're not opening the firewall for inbound connections.
Right. Gotcha.
So all of it's done outbound, and of course, HTTPS.
Okay.
So we can publish an application through the proxy. And what we can do, if it's a Windows Kerberos app, we can publish it and use Kerberos constraint delegation to translate to a Kerberos token. Let's just have a quick look at that.
We'll
look at it and then we can talk about it again.
Yeah, see, Kerberos bends my head.
Oh, Kerberos is lovely stuff. I love Kerberos. So here I am logging into a Windows app on premises, right? So I'm going to go in, you know, standard, my domain is called example, John. And there I've gone in as this guy, John. And notice it says authentication authority asserted identity. This is actually the KDC that has asserted this identity. It's also Kerberos. And for this to work, it has to be Kerberos.
Right, okay.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to go actually through the WA proxy endpoint. And if we just grab that, let's just put that into Notepad. So we can see that we're actually going up to ms@proxy.net. And if I want to, I can put my own domain names up there. I don't have to use theirs, but I'm just using that because in this particular example, I wanted to show header translation as well, which we're not going to do today. So let's close that off and let's go to it. Now, this is the interesting thing is we're going to bounce up to Azure. All right, we're going to log in as John, and we know where we're going to go now. We're going to bounce back
to the ADFS
on-premise.
Yep.
So that's where we're logging into our ADFS server. And then we bounce back to Azure, and we've come now in. And what it's done, it's Kerberos, but it's service asserted identity. And the service that's asserted is actually the end of the app proxy. That proxy running on premises has actually asserted the identity.
Right.
So if we look at it, what's actually happened is we've gone to the published endpoint, right, which is in the Azure AD application proxy. Oh, got that right. And what it said is, to come through me, you need to be authenticated. So it's bounced me off to Azure AD, right?
Right.
This particular user happens to be a federated domain. So it's bounced me down to ADFS, bounced me back to Azure. Azure has issued a token which will allow me through the proxy.
Right.
So I've now come through the proxy.
Yep.
The only thing that's come through with me is my UPN. Right. I've then come down to the proxy endpoint inside the corporate network, and the proxy endpoint says, ah, it's John, you know, at blah, blah, blah. What I need to do is go to the KDC using Kerberos constrained delegation with protocol transitioning.
Right.
All right. And get a Kerberos token to the back end. And that's exactly what happened. And that's why the proxy endpoint in CorpNet has actually asserted the authority.
Okay. See, for a second, I was thinking this was going to mean I didn't have to learn Kerberos, but it turns out I do still. That's fine. It's a bit of a
niche, only if you want to support. You only need to learn Kerberos if you want to support your legacy Windows applications.
Yeah.
And publish them through, you know, with authentication.
Yeah.
The alternative is just say anonymous authentication.
Oh yeah, I'm down with that one.
Yeah. In terms of reaching consumers, we've got the ability to use B2C. And what B2C does, it allows me to consume identity from Google, from Facebook, from Amazon account, and so on. And there's various endpoints. So I've got a sign-up policy, I've got an authentication policy, and it basically controls the look and feel to the user, plus which attributes are being used.
Okay.
Easiest way is just to see it in action. So let's just do a very quick demo of that. And what we've got in here is we're going off to B2C. And we're going to, first of all, go to the sign up to B2C endpoint. And what it's saying is sign up, and I'm going to sign up so I can have my identity in the Azure B2C, or I could use it through another identity provider. I've just got Google set up.
Yep.
I'm going to sign up through here. And what it's doing is saying, what's your username? What's your password? You know, confirm it. What's your email for the verification? And all I'm asking for is, what's your city? But I could ask you, you know, what's your shoe size? Or what are other attributes I wanted to gather?
Right.
So this is the sign up process. Once you've signed up, if we actually look at, you know, what it looks like from a sign in perspective, and this is actually using OpenID Connect. I'm going across. I'm going to use Google. So I'm going across. It's taking me straight across to Google. I supply a Google account in here, and having supplied a Google account, obviously I need to supply the Google password, which if I can remember it, which is always useful to remember these things. And there we are, we're in. And what it's done is it's showing that the IDP is Google, right? And it's actually got my email. Now, to be able to do this, the first time I would have done it, I would have been asked for consent. But
right.
I'm not going to go into consent because that's a whole
other ball game.
So
at that point, correct me if I'm wrong, so Google has said, yes, John is who he says he is, I vouch for him. But in your B2C directory, anything additional that I need to know about you that Google doesn't tell me, I'd ask you, and that will get stored in my B2C directory with some kind of reference to who you are on Google, so that it knows that I've got to go and check who you are, and then I can get access to all this information. Yeah,
you know all this, don't you? That's a very extremely good summary. yes, I mean, notice down the bottom it says City, New York. That doesn't come out of Google. That comes out after during the sign-up process. I requested the city, but I could request all sorts of other attributes as well.
Okay.
So that would work.
So B2C is great if I'm creating my own app and I don't want to have to build all of that morass of infrastructure to store the information about my users or authenticate, then that's a great springboard forward if I'm a dev.
Yes, absolutely. So you know, and especially if you want to consume social identity sort of from Facebook and everything else, it's a great way to start.
Okay.
Just in case of reaching partners, what we can do is we can have an application that we've published, and we can create an email invitation that gets sent off to a partner, and that partner could be, you know, rick@xyz.com, right? And what will happen is you'll get the invitation, you'll click on a link in the invitation, which will take you to Azure AD, and what it will do is say rick@xyz.com, haha, does an Azure AD tenant exist for xyz.com, and are you in it?
Right.
And if you are, all it does, it says, okay, fine, I'll establish the trust. So now you can gain access to my application. And when I create the invitation, I will be saying which groups you're in and which applications you're allowed access to.
Okay.
Okay. And then if you're not in it, what it will do is if no tenant exists, it will spin up a tenant. All right? And automatically you'll be provisioned into that. And if a tenant has already been spun up, it will also can add you to that. So lots of different scenarios, but it's all this invitation-driven mechanism.
Okay.
And those are referred to, those tenants that are spun up are referred to as unmanaged tenants. So in summary, what will Azure AD do for you? It's a core identity authentication authorization service for distributed applications, devices, and users, right? So we can bring all these people together to work together. It's support for modern protocols and devices, which is obviously very, very important. It simplifies making SaaS in-house and partner applications available to users. Integrates on-premise AD, and there are many additional supporting services and enhancements, and there will be more and more. Now, you might be wondering, how on earth do I get started with all this? So I'm going to do a shameless plug of an identity masterclass, which is 4 days of hands-on, 30-plus hands-on. So you really do get to look at all this in detail. Best way is to just have a look on our website, xcseminars.co.
I know that's been playing in the breaks.
That's
great.
That.
Our countdown timer is at zero. Don't go away. I'm really chuffed, actually. The last session of the day is going to be delivered by Rob Fraser, who's the chief evangelist, I think. Heap big honcho here at Microsoft. He's a lovely bloke, and he's going to tee up the content of tomorrow and put a sort of wrapper on what we've done today by talking about cloud and artificial intelligence and what Microsoft is doing in that space. Big, big thanks
great.
For joining
well,
us, John. It was a pleasure having you on the couch.
Thanks for having me along. Yeah, that's great.
And we'll be back in 15 minutes.
Okay, thank you.